Part of our meeting. So welcome again to the Sunday night There's a Solution newcomer and returning member meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. Visit our website at oaontario.org where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Our speaker today is a compulsive overeater and a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence and has recovered to the directions in the Big Book and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After she shares, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. So please join me in giving a very warm welcome to Crystal R., a compulsive overeater from Toronto.
Hi, everybody. Can you hear me? Yeah, okay. Hi, everyone. My name is Crystal R. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Toronto, Canada. Thank you so much for having me share today. I always start my share by saying, this is not my story. If it was my story, it would be the story of a girl who died at the age of 30 years old, because that's exactly where I was going, and I would have been very happy to go there. This is the story of what God has done for me, how God literally saved me from a horrible and very untimely end. And I was thinking about what I would share. Let me first just qualify a little bit, which is to let you know what I was like before I came into program. I was over 250 pounds, and I'm only like 5 feet tall, so that's a lot of weight on a very short person. And I was in the ER way more times than anybody who's my age at, 30 years old should ever have to be in the ER. I had such a terrible, like my weight had caused such a terrible anemia that there were times when I couldn't take like a full breath in for maybe like 5 hours at a time. And it was terrifying. It makes you feel like you're actually asphyxiating. And it didn't matter. All the doctors were looking at me like, we don't know what to do with you. We're going to have to give you blood transfusions or iron infusions because we can't solve the real problem, which is your weight. And and if you don't, if that doesn't change, you're not going to make it past your 30s. So that's where I was physically. But also the food, what the place that food had in my life, it was my everything. It did. I don't know. I don't know what age it was that something clicked, but something just clicked in me where it did something for me. And the way I saw it is that, it's not like a drug that makes you feel high. For me, it makes me feel safe. Whenever I feel unsafe, and I can feel unsafe because of many things, like even happy feelings make me unsafe. Actually, any feelings, I kind of feel like I'm, you know how you have people who are gluten-free, oh, sorry, gluten intolerant? I feel like I'm feelings intolerant. Like my body just does not know, like, what do I do with this sensation, even if it's like excited, happy, surprised, like even sad, a disappointed, I have no clue how to process any of that. And it just comes up with this feeling of like, please make it go away. Please make it go away. And food would just make it all go away. Food, like by the time I came into program, I had stopped dieting. I had stopped making any promises to myself. I literally just woke up every day knowing that I was going to binge my face off, and then I was going to do it for the next day and the next day and the next day. And basically, anyone that got in my way didn't stay in my life for very long. And by getting in my way is even just like making comments about my food, or if you made me feel bad about what I was eating, you didn't stay in my life for very long. So that's kind of where I was at 250 pounds, very sick, and the food had me. It was my master. Emotionally, I don't know how it's possible. The fact that I was just I felt like I was like a 3-year-old girl inside a 31-year-old girl's body, woman's body. It's just this little girl inside who's so afraid of everything. Just like, please don't let anyone figure out that I'm only 3 in here and I really don't know what to do. And I'm so terrified. In fact, you could ask me what I was afraid of, and I would not be able to tell you because everything terrified me. It was like the background music of my life was just fear. Everything, I was afraid that something would happen and something would not happen. Something good would happen, something bad would happen. Like anything could happen, and it's just my immediate reaction is fear, And because of that, I had no relationships. I couldn't have any relationships. Everyone in my life, their job was just to keep me safe. And as long as they made me feel safe, then I could function. And as long as they didn't make me feel safe, there was like a threat hanging over everyone in my life. Everyone was a hostage. It was like, either you keep me safe by behaving and acting the way I need you to act, or I will self-destruct. That was like the threat that hung over everybody in my life. And I couldn't show up for anybody because I spent my entire, like 90% of my life was spent on my couch with my hand in a crinkly bag. And I was a girl that, about 2 hours after I was expected to be somewhere, I would call them to let them know I wasn't coming. That was, or I was going to be 3 hours late. That's who I used to be. I couldn't show up for anyone. So I couldn't be in any relationships. And spiritually, I was the most religious person you'd ever meet. Like, I was just, all I wanted was to be a nun. That's all I wanted to do. And I would hang out with these nuns in Toronto and kind of wish that one day they would just forget to send me home and I would just wear the habit and I would be a nun and nobody would realize and I could just be one of them. And I thought the more religious people I surrounded myself with, the more the better relationship I had with God. And that was my strategy, to keep myself safe, is that I was going to surround myself with the most religious, holy people that I knew. And that was going to turn me into Saint Crystal. And that was my big plan, but what I found out when I came into program was that I actually had no relationship with God at all, which would have shocked a lot of people because I've actually, like, I gave a talk in front of 18,000 people about my faith. I had like uncles and aunts who are much older than me that would come to me and be like, "Can you please pray for us?" Because I was little Miss Saint Crystal. Like, I was always in church, always praying. Oops, did I get muted? Can you hear me now? Okay, so I had that was God's way of being like, wrap it up, Crystal. You're like, no, oh, thanks, Pat. So it was just, I was just like Miss Religion, And when I came into program and realized, my goodness, I don't even have a relationship with God. And in fact, the only thing that I had towards God was fear. I was terrified of God. And the reason is there was only one God in my life, and that was me. I said that I believed in this like other God, and I oh my gosh, I could spout theories and theology and all this stuff about that God, but the only God I believed in was me. And I was a horrible, horrible God. I was exacting and small and powerless and mean to myself all the time. So I was a terrible God. So this is how I came into program, and program totally changed my life. I'd never been in a 12-step program before. And so when I came in, this was like all I knew about 12-step programs was, I think, one like a Sandra Bullock's movie that I watched, which is nothing like what it actually is, and I came in and I was told, put down. Finally, I met people who actually knew what was wrong with me. Nobody ever knew that. And they told me, first of all, I have an allergy of the body. That means that even if I put a little bit of my alcoholic foods in me, that's it. Like, I can't stop. I have lost the ability to tell myself when I'm going to stop. And I have a twist of the mind that even once I put that food down, my mind will be like, "It's fine, it's fine. Just pick it up again." Meaning my mind will tell me things that are actually fatal to me and untrue, and I will believe them. How scary is that? That my mind is going to lie to me and tell me. Imagine if my mind was like, "Oh yeah, that socket is not dangerous. Go put your finger right in there. Don't worry about it." And I believed it every time. That's a terrifying way to live your life. And that actually scared me. And then as I worked the steps, I realized that what's really underneath this whole disease is what I learned was selfishness and self-centeredness. And to me, what that meant was I had two core beliefs. One is that everything is about me. And two is that everything is on me. So the way people looked, smiled, the moment I, walk across people in on the subway, it's like, oh yeah, they're all looking at me thinking X, Y, and Z about me. And no matter what's going on in the world, it's all on my shoulders. I've got to fix it. I gotta get my parents' marriage back on track. My sister's career is not going right. I gotta fix that. My friend is dating someone she shouldn't be dating. I gotta fix that. Everything's on me. Those are both not livable beliefs. If you actually believe that, like, you can't function. Like, you can't wake up in the morning and just be. Like, that's exhausting. And no wonder I needed an anesthetic just to get through 5 minutes of the day. So those were the beliefs that I had that I couldn't live with. So today, what I'm going to focus on and talk to you about is the step that really, I think, is sort of one of those like rocked me to the core kind of steps, which was steps 2 and 3. And so I really want to share about that because I think that's one of the biggest things that I'm so grateful for in program is my conception of God and what I believe about God today and my willingness to turn my will and life over to God. And let me tell you, first of all, as a person who came in and thought she had the perfect conception of God because she knew, had read every book about God, and a person who had totally believed that, you know, she had given her life to God already because she spent 90% of her time in church, it's very surprising when you actually have to give your turn your will and life over to God and actually have to face God when there's nothing else between you and the world. You know, it's very easy to do when you've got a whole wall between you and the world made up of like cheesy and crunchy foods. You know, once all those go away and there's nothing standing between you and reality, that's when step two and three really started to mean something to me. And I'll say, I remember thinking, you know, oh, step two should be a breeze, right? Like, because I'm religious, so I don't even need to read We Agnostics. It's got nothing to do with me. But step two was probably one of the hardest steps for me because I had to realize that my conception of God had to change so much because the God that I believed in and the God that I acted like I believed in were two totally different gods. The God I said I believed in and the one I actually believed in, two totally different gods. You know, and the one that I had was not working. And what I also realized was step two was not a step I took one time in the past and that's it. Right? Like it was a step that I take today. Like today, I had to take step two. Tomorrow, I'm going to have to take step two because as I recover, my life gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and more people get into it. Because when I leave the side of my couch and take my hand out of the crinkly bag, like more people start to come into my lives. I get other jobs. I start meeting people. I start getting involved in things in my community. And as that happens, I have to come to believe that God is bigger than even those things, that I'm powerless over my marriage, I'm powerless over my job, I'm powerless over my house, and God is will restore me to sanity in each of those areas. So I had to come to believe that. And in order to do that, I had to let go of patterns and beliefs that I had clung on to for 30 years. So I'm going to share with you some of these key patterns and beliefs that I had clung on to. Just before I continue, can someone just let me know how much time I have left, please?
Nicole, can you tell Crystal how much time she has left?
Is it about like 20 minutes?
Yeah, why don't we say that, Crystal? 20
Okay.
minutes.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. So these are some of the key beliefs that I had that had to change. The first one was that God was a formal God. You know, it's a very like you sit in church and you kneel down and you hold your hands like this and you pray very specific prayers in a very specific order. And that was my God, you know? And when I came into program, I realized that doesn't work. And the time that I realized this was when I, after about 1 year of being abstinent, I met a guy and he asked for my number and we went on 3 dates. And obviously, after that, I picked out our wedding dress and I was like, our children will be named X, Y, and Z. And I'm like, clearly, this is the man, obviously, because I actually met him like 1 day after my abstinence date. So obviously, this is the man I'm going to marry. You know, and then after the fourth date, it didn't work out. And I plunged into like a depression that everyone was like, what is the matter with you? You went out on 4 dates, you know? And the reason is this was the first time I had felt unadulterated emotional pain. Like no anesthetic, just pure emotional pain without anything to dull it. And I had no idea that's how it felt, you know? And it just, I remember. You know, this one time I was sitting, I had done all the step 10s. I'd call people. Now it was 10 p.m. at night. There's no one but me in my condo. You know, now it's me and God. And I remember sitting on the couch, and this was the first time I talked to God like it's not a formal God, you know? And I said, I was like, you know what, God? Like, this is just too much for me. Like, this is just too much pain. You need to show up like right now. Like right now, you need to do something because I can't handle this. And that was the first time I talked to God like that ever. You know, and because I always had to be a good little girl, and I don't know how this happened, but I just got up. I don't even know where this came from. I got up and I turned on all the twinkly lights in my condo and I put on this song by Elton John called Your Song. I don't know if you've heard that song. It's such a pretty song. And I stood up in the middle of my living room and I put my arms up and I closed my eyes and I slow danced with God in my living room. I have no idea where that came from, but that's what I did. I closed my eyes and I don't want to tell you, like I could feel my cheek on his chest. I could feel his face against my forehead. I could Like I could hear his heartbeat as I was holding on to him. And I know, like, I just bawled my eyes out while I was crying. And I bet if people were looking into my condo, because I've got like glass windows all around, I probably looked crazy to them, but I know I was not crazy. I know I was not alone in that condo last night. That night, I know I was not dancing alone because I hadn't slept for more than like an hour ever since I broke up with that guy. And that night, I slept like a baby. And I didn't wake up until morning, so that told me I was not alone in the room. So that was the first time it moved from a formal God to what I call my dancing God. So now whenever I want, I just turn on my favorite song and I slow dance with God in my living room. The second was the disappointed God. It was, this is, oh my gosh, I don't know about you. Like I would wake up every morning and like my first thought in the morning was, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. I don't even know why. I don't even know what I did wrong. Like I've just opened my eyes and my first thought is, please don't be mad at me. Like, what do I need to do to like get you to be okay with me? And I always felt like God was just disappointed with me all the time. And so I just realized it's starting to get dark and I'm starting to look like I'm in witness protection program. So I'm just gonna, there we go. All right. Now you can see me. So here we go. So so the disappointed God, and I remember what the way this one was a really big one for me because there was a friend of mine that I really cared about and I didn't want to lose her. And so I actually lied to her and I pretended to like things that she didn't like, that I didn't like because she liked them. And I kind of, because I just didn't want her to leave me. I wanted her to like me. And she found out that I'd been lying to her. And she was really upset, rightly so. And she really didn't know if she wanted to be my friend again. And I remember being like, that brought me kind of to my knees. And what it got me to realize is that the reason I do that with people is I do whatever I have to do to get them to like me is because I put them up on pedestals and they need to protect me. And then I asked myself the question, why did I have to put people up on pedestals? Why wasn't God on that pedestal? Why was the pedestal empty to begin with? And the reason is I was terrified of God. And I remember I did this exercise with some outside help where they had me sit in a chair and just tell God how I feel and have another chair next to me and just tell God how I feel. And what I said to God was like, I was so surprised by what came out. The first time I actually talked very candidly with God, I'm like, what do you want from me? Like, can't, like, I'm trying my best here. Why would you take this friend away from me? Like, I'm doing my best. You're never there. You never help me out the way I need help. I'm doing my best. And why can't you just help me? And then she had me switch chairs and now sit in God's chair and respond to me. And I was so surprised by what came out. What God said was, oh, you're such a disappointment. Like, you are such a drama queen. Like, you just cause these problems. I've given you so much help, so many gifts. You waste them all. You're such a disappointment. And the person stopped me and she said, let me pause you there. Have you heard that voice before? And it kind of dawned on me. I was like, oh, I've heard my parents say that. And my parents are lovely people. And it's very likely they never actually said those words, but that's what I heard from them. Is your disappointment, your drama queen, and we are disappointed in you. And you are useless, and there are times where my mom has said things like, like you're such a drama queen or your things are easy. You just make them difficult. And, whatever the context was, that stuck with me. And I put that voice on God. And for the first time, I realized that I'd never actually encountered God. It was just this voice that I put on him. And so this person suggested, she was like, okay, can we keep that voice to the side for a minute? And can you try and say what you think God is actually trying to say to you? Can you just be open to what God might actually be trying to say to you? And in that moment, God said, you are such a drama queen, and I love it. I'm a drama, I'm all dramatic too. I made you just like me. You are just fine the way that you are. Whatever's standing between you and me, I cannot bear it. You don't need to try and come to me. I'm coming to you. I'm coming to get you. You just keep doing what you're doing. I am fighting for you. You don't have to come to me. I'm coming to you. And I won't stop until there's nothing between you and me. So that became my God from then on. This God was not disappointed in me. I was the apple of his eye. He's like a mush ball with me. I'm his adorable little chickpea. That's what he calls me now. I'm his little chickpea. And now I call God Papa. God is my Papa, and I'm his little chickpea, you know? And he just loves me to bits. And he's coming to get me. So I don't worry about whether my relationship with God is right, if I trust him enough. Whatever's standing between me and him, he'll fix it. He's going to take care of it. I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing. The other belief that I had that had to go away was the shoe dropping God. I don't know if you had this, but it's like that. I constantly lived with this fear of like, when is the other shoe going to drop? When is the, oh no, things are getting too good. Like, I remember when I was a little kid, like right from the time I was a little kid, if I had one of those weekends that was like a really good weekend, you know, like the big party on the Sunday or whatever, it was like I would be dreading Monday because it's like, oh no, you had way too much fun on Sunday. That means Monday something bad's going to happen. And I don't know if it's just me, but like I lived with this belief of like, if things got too good, then, you know, the other shoe's gonna drop because God's gonna take it away from me. It was just like, I was so afraid God's gonna take it away from me. He's gonna teach me a lesson because I'm having too much fun, you know? And the time this was probably the hardest it has ever been is when I met my, who's now my husband, but when I met him as my boyfriend, which was 3 years ago. And I had this core belief that if I like something too much, meaning I like it more than God, God will take it away from me to protect me or teach me a lesson. You know, that's a terrifying belief because then you can never enjoy anything in your life. And here it is, this lovely man has come into my life. I like him a lot. And I'm going to be honest, I liked him more than God. And I did, you know, and I knew it. And I'm like, oh God, God's going to take him away. God's clearly going to take him away. He's clearly become my higher power and God's going to take him away, you know? And I was terrified for 9 months of dating him. I was terrified. Every month, every week or so, there was some new crisis of like, oh my gosh, I knew it. This was it. This is it. This is where he's going to leave me. It's all going to end. It's never going to work out. And honestly, I feel like my sponsor deserves some kind of an award just for like not leaving me in those nine months until finally we got to the 9 month point. She's like, I've had it. Like, I'm done. This is ridiculous. She's like, what I want you to do. I'm sorry, she did not say this is ridiculous. She was much kinder about it. But she was like, you know what? We need to pause. She was like, I want you to write down in these 9 months how many times you have thought this was going to end and what were the reasons, you know? And I wrote them down. There were 35 reasons in 9 months where I was absolutely sure this is it. This relationship's going to end. It's never going to work. God's going to take him away right now. And somehow it all just worked out, you know? And what I realized in that moment was that I was not protecting this relationship from God. God was protecting this relationship from me. I was the one who had almost broken this relationship about 30 different times, and every single time he saved it for me. And that was the first time I heard God say to me, you silly chicken, like I'm not the one who's going to take away Alex from you. I'm the one who gave him to you. And I gave him to you because I want you to have him. I want you to enjoy him. And it was so, my favorite part was when God said to me, because then I was talking to God and I'm like, thank you, God. But you know, I think he's turned into my higher power and I'm so sorry. I don't know what to do about that. And he was like, I know he's your higher power. I can, like, I know your heart more than you, but you've never had a boyfriend before. This is your first boyfriend. Obviously, you've made him your higher power. Don't worry. I'm going to help you and it'll go away. It's going to get better over time and you'll just keep working the steps. And over time, I'll be back in the higher power seat. Don't worry. You know, so it was just, there's no, like, you know, no drill sergeant waiting for me to screw up to like take away things from me. And today, one of the greatest gifts in my life is I believe with all of my heart, no matter what happens, it's the best thing for me. Like, God's got me. Like, He's every gift I have is from God. And everything that happens to me is a gift today. Even the stuff that feels hard, I somehow know it's just a gift. And then that brings me to step three. Step three is where I made the decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. And for me, what I realized is, you know, this is not about lofty declarations and like me, God, I'm going to turn my life over to you. Because I used to make a lot of those in church, you know, when I was like, you know, praying the rosary for the 50th time and I'm like having all these spiritual visions and I'm like, God, like you're everything to me. And that's not step three at all for me anyways. What I realized step three was, it's a very simple thing. Actually, there's a line in the Big Book that I absolutely love. It's my favorite line. If I could ever bear the pain of a tattoo, I would tattoo that onto my skin, but I can't stand needles. So I'll just have to remember it in my heart. And that is, we stood at the turning point and we asked his protection and care with complete abandon. That is step three for me. Step three is I face turning points every day in my life. And a turning point is not, God, should I do A or B? Because that's what I would do, is I would give God the options, you know, like, God, there's option A and option B, which option should I take? And I came to find that God is not like my option selector. You know, in God's world, there is 360 degrees worth of options, and I can't see a single one of them. So I'm just standing at the turning point, and my options are, either am I going to do this alone, or am I going to do this with God? Those are my only two options, you know, and when I choose to do it with God, the whole world opens up. So my choice is just, I'm turning. I'm not asking for the answer even. I'm not asking for to feel better, make this feeling go away, make the problem go away, nothing. Just please give me your protection and care with complete abandon, no matter what happens. And when I'm in that place, that's my step three. So what does that look like in real life? In real life, it means that when I feel that fire in my belly, like, I gotta send that email, I gotta call the contractor, I gotta like do this, I gotta go do that. That's the time to not do anything. That's the time to pause. That's the time to like breathe. And if you've ever been in that position, that is the hardest thing to do ever. Like when you feel like you're fighting for your life and you just want to send the email, or you're so angry and you just want to send that text to protect yourself, to pause there and instead, God, I'm standing at the turning point and I'm asking only for your protection and care with complete abandon. And I remember doing this when
Five minutes left.
my husband and I wanted to buy a house, and we were very excited, and we started looking at houses before we looked at the mortgage rates. And then we looked at the mortgage rates and it was like, oh, hello, like we can't buy a house. And I remember I was sitting on this Excel spreadsheet and just working through numbers and numbers and numbers. And somehow I was like, the answer's in this Excel. And if I can just work the numbers right, somehow we can afford a house. And I remember making, and I remember pausing just for like half a second and being like, God, help me. That was it. That was the only pause I was willing to give God. And in that moment, you know, I called a fellow. While I'm on the phone with a fellow doing the step 10, I'm working on the Excel, trying to figure out how we're going to find a house, you know. And then finally, at the end of the step 10, I was like, okay, I got to be honest. I'm on the Excel and I don't want to stop it. I do not want to stop it. And she was like, okay, I'm on the phone with you. Can you just shut it down with me on the phone with you right now? That was one of the hardest things, was just closing down Excel and putting my laptop away for that re for the rest of the day. It was one of the hardest things I had to do. So the pause. And the second thing is to stop, just do the next right thing. That's all. Most of the time, when I say, God, I'm standing at the turning point and I'm asking only for your protection and care with complete abandon, please just show me the next right thing to do. And the best part is, the next right thing is never big and flamboyant. It's never go quit your job, go tell your boss this, you know, go get your husband to do something different, go buy that house. It's go brush your teeth, you know, go call your sponsor, go make yourself dinner, go have a shower. You know, it's little things. It's like, hey, aren't you supposed to do your step work? Go do your step work. You know, it's like, and you're like, no, but I've got this like humongous decision that I need to make, and I need to go figure that out, and I should probably create an Excel spreadsheet to do that. And God's like, no. Close everything down, go brush your teeth, go get into bed, you know. And so those are the small, and my willingness to do those small next right actions is what my step three is. And what I'd like to share with you is, I'm very grateful my sponsor got me to write my own step three prayer. And I remember my first step three prayer was very, it was almost like I was kind of making demands at God. You know, it was kind of like, God, like in this day, like, please give me this, give me peace and help me and make me do this and make me less selfish and et cetera, like give me all these things. And it was like a big list of demands. You know, it's like a grocery list. God, like, please fulfill this. And then I realized, like, I don't need to do that. Like, God already knows everything I need and want, and He's got it. So this is my prayer, my third step prayer. God, no, not Papa. Papa, you are so good to me. You are the reason I can trust my mind. You give me the gift of abstinence because you love me so much and you want me to live fully and abundantly. Because of you, I have a job that I love, a condo that feels like a palace, a loving husband, a wonderful sponsor, a strong, healthy body. And I'm less and less afraid of you every day, and I can be helpful to other people. You give me everything I need, and you've surrounded me with angels to help me. Even when I make a mistake, you take care of me, and you make everything work out with the best outcome for everyone involved, not just me. Everything that happens today is your gift to me. I don't need to plan, orchestrate, or worry about anything. You've got me, and I am safe with you. So the last thing I'll just close off by saying is, in the last 3, 4 months, I got married in July of last year, and in the last about 6 months, I'm gonna say I have been both me and my husband have been really sick. So he got diagnosed with sciatica, had to take time off work. I had major issues with pelvic muscles, and I have to go for physiotherapy. I've had breathing problems that no doctor can figure out what is wrong with me. I've been for so many tests, and nobody can figure out why I can't breathe. My doctors put me on 2 anti-anxiety medications that have made me very sleepy, very tired. And just a few weeks ago, my husband decided he's not happy in his job and he's leaving his job. And he's been a teacher all his life, so he's gonna have to find a totally new career, and he doesn't know what it's gonna be. And he's thinking of getting into voice acting, which is, where you like give the voice for an animated show, which is the exact opposite of my very stable, very conventional 9-to-5 office job. And with all of these things happening, I can't even tell you. I'm so grateful. Like, there are days where I cry a lot of the days. And sometimes when you're on medication, it just kind of makes you cry. And just with things like this, and it doesn't matter. This is the happiest I have ever been in my entire life. Those emotions are like just little waves on the surface, but deep down inside, I am so happy. I can't even stand it. And every day I wake up, and when these things happen, like even when I found out my husband said, I have to leave my job, I can't take it anymore. I was like, I just know it. I just know this is going to be the best thing ever for us. I don't know how or why, but what I know is I ask God not to give me a big house or to give me a good job for my husband. I ask God to give me a happy married life. And the reason he's given us this challenge is because I know it will bring us closer together somehow, and it will lead to something even better for us, because he knows what it takes to have a long, married, happy life, not me. And so I'm so grateful that I live today with the belief that no matter what happens, it's not just something I have to bear through. It is a gift, and I just have to unwrap it. Thanks for letting me share a path.
Thank you so much, Crystal.